All right, so we're ready to start part two. Everybody ready? Everybody ready?
The kindly light amid encircling gloom. Lead thou
well, it's a delight, let me tell you. As one of the few that's partaken among us, it is delightful.
I'm not going to shy away from this. I'm going to go with Bob's Mormon Tread Scale.
For some reason, number 3.5 is coming up for me right now. I'm not sure why. I don't know why that number just popped in my head.
Mormon Stories Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation.
All donations on Thrones
are fully tax deductible.
Philosophies of men are
towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building.
We are the world.
Fun and funny, and I wanted to laughing, entertainment, not taking things so seriously.
I have a hard time telling Matt and Bob apart when I listen, honestly.
Really?
No, sorry, not Matt. Scott and Bob.
There you go. That's
yeah, I've heard that before. Everybody, yeah, nobody. It seems like I'm.
It sounds like Seth Rogen.
Some suppose that they were preset and cannot overcome what they feel are inborn tendencies toward the impure and the unnatural. Not so. Why would our Heavenly Father do that to anything? To sexy or compassion, so-called tolerance must be wrong.
I'm not doing this for the money. I'm not doing it for the attention. I think every single Mormon on this planet has the right to know the factual record as it relates to the church's origins. Everyone should be able to make a conscious decision with all the information on the table.
This is Infants on
Mormon Stories Podcast.
The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Hello and welcome back to part
two
of my awesome, fun, insightful interview with the panelists on Infants on Thrones at infantsandthrones.com. I'm John DeLynn. And now we're going to kind of get back to the personal and then end by just talking about sort of issues within Mormonism generally and within the blogosphere, the podcast realm, and the church. It's going to be kind of a free-for-all of a bunch of topics. But I want to start by just talking about a few more things that are kind of personal. One question that I thought would be fun is to have each of you just kind of share with something that y'all do, each of you do in your spare time that doesn't have to do with Mormonism, just so we can learn a tiny bit more about you guys individually. And I'll start from the middle of the pack, according to my little list on the paper. So I'll start with Scott. Scott, what's something that you do in your free time that doesn't have to do with Mormonism?
So I've gotten into motorcycle riding recently.
Nice.
Well, I've been into motorbikes and that sort of thing my whole life, but I just got a street bike. So yeah, that's my thing right now.
So not motocross, but street bike.
No. Yeah.
Is it a Harley?
No, it's a BMW.
Nice. All right. Wear your helmet. Promise you'll wear your helmet.
Always. Yep.
All right. Randy, how about you?
Nothing. I used to golf a lot. Then I tweaked my back too many times golfing. And, you know, I have a job that's a little bit physical. It's not super physical, but, you know, you do have to have a functioning back to do orthodontics. And I've moved recently from Kansas City to Denver. And one of the things that I plan to do once the weather turns is fly fishing. I've always loved fly fishing. When I was at BYU, that's where I first picked it up. BYU, Provo Canyon, it's a great place to go fishing. So that's something I want to do, mainly because I need to find something that I can do with my boys. That's, you know, good quality bonding time.
All right, I got a buddy who can hook you up, Randy. So let's talk afterwards if you want a good experience.
Does he live in Denver?
No, but we could find a way to make it work.
Okay.
He likes to go to Denver, I'll say that.
Is that a euphemism?
No.
Okay.
Right. He likes to smoke.
My head.
He likes to smoke weed.
Yeah.
I did not say that.
He likes Bob. To go to Denver.
Bob, how
we
about you?
We all like to go to Denver.
Hey, Matt, what do I do in my spare time?
Movies, homie.
Gaming. There you go.
Gaming.
I'm a media consumer. I love to play games, watch movies, listen to music. So I'm looking or listening, looking at a screen or listening to a podcast or music. So I just enjoy that side of sensual stimulation. I don't know what to call it. It's fun.
Favorite movie of all time. No pressure.
Well, I would have to say something like, you know, Citizen Kane or Casablanca, but I'm going to go with, for me personally, nothing tops a night of drinking while watching Office Space.
Ooh, yeah. I'm going to have to go ahead and sort of disagree with you there.
I can do that over and over again.
That's not bad.
Nice. That's a good one.
Good for you, Bob.
Bob.
I'm going to need
movie,
to stay.
Movie cred restored?
Yeah, that's a lot better.
Hi, Glenn, you're next.
Probably similar to Bob, but maybe not as snobbishly.
Because you have kids.
Not as snobbishly.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for catching that. No, I mean, I do spend a... So
I'm scared to ask you your favorite movie now.
My favorite movie? I don't know if I have one, but we watched Phone Booth the other night, and that's awesome. Love that movie.
Yeah,
it
was
movie.
All right.
That was Colin Farrell? Really,
yeah, but it's all like... It all happens in this contained space. It's kind of brilliant. It's like it's very talky. But I like talky kind of stuff when it's good dialogue. So I like watching TV shows.
Yeah, like Tarantino talky or like
no more like
Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah,
more like a Sorkin. I love Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah,
West Wing.
Yeah, like West Wing is super cool.
See, I didn't know that you could list watching movies. As your
right. Hobby.
Is that a hobby?
Yeah.
Yes,
hobby. Bob even added drinking to it.
Yeah. Since I've got my hobbies, my TV.
Yeah. So
no, it's all right, Randy, because we're going to get you out fly fishing. You're going to be glad you mentioned that one.
I spend a lot of time on my computer, and a lot of it is editing the podcast, and I'll do that while the kids are watching a show. My daughters are enjoying Gilmore Girls right now.
That's a great show.
So, yeah.
That's very talky.
Yeah,
it's a very talky
show.
Yeah.
Jake.
Okay, so I mean, I probably not allowed to say this one, but I play a lot of video games.
Nice.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say porn.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Nudist clubs. Go, Jake.
Right. No nudist gun. Although I do love onsen, which is Japanese bathhouses, right, Glenn?
Woohoo.
Ooh.
So, Jake, do you mean like console games or computer games?
Well, I usually do console games just because I like the ergonomics of the controller. It bothers me to play on the computer. Although, like
First-person shooters?
There's some first-person shooters. I don't know. I like stealthy games, too. So when you're like sneaking around... And the thing is, video games are a thing that I think that I personally like to do, but I'm not convinced that they're not a terrible thing in general. Because because like in a video game, I'll be walking around and be like, you know what? I only have 3 smoke bombs. I should probably have 5 for this next mission. So I'll just walk up to a stranger and stab them to death and then search their corpse and be like, oh, no, he only had 5 francs. He didn't actually have a smoke bomb. I better go murder another person and see if they have a smoke bomb.
So you play those like assassin games?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed and stuff like that. So yeah, and
what's
and
the one with like pimps? What's the one with like pimps and prostitutes?
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah,
Grand Theft Auto is also a great one. The BioShock series, I'm a big fan of. But yeah, I'm not sure that they're not terrible. But I like them. I also like coast fishing. I've gotten into that here in North Carolina.
Oh so. Sure, I like bird watching too.
But there's nothing that can really compete with like being able to sit in your house But go through a simulated experience where you're like the hero, you know, save the world, you know. So it's kind of,
love it.
I feel like it's hot wiring your brain a little bit. I don't know if it's a good thing, but I like doing it. So whatever.
That's awesome. All right, Tom.
I like cycling and I love sports. I'm also kind of a comedy nerd, comedy nut that way. Good comedy, not like the Bob comedy.
Oh, what are you saying about Oscars?
That's nice. Speaking of sports, I'm surprised you guys didn't do a SmackDown on that full page article that came out in the Deseret News a week or two ago about how all you of you fans should be BYU fans too.
Oh yeah, right. I remember seeing that.
Because it doesn't deserve the public air. It's such crap.
We did do a Manti Te'o episode.
Hello. This is the real fake Lene Kukua. A lot of people have said that I'm fake. And maybe I'm a little superficial, but what do you want to know? I think Manti is a great guy. Anyway, Randy, this is what I want to say to you. Tonight at 9 p.m. Central, I know it's a special time for you. And I know there are certain things that you want to do that you don't want to miss out on. I can help you with that, big boy.
That's awesome. I remember that. All right, Matt.
Well, I have a road bike. I like to do road biking since I jacked up my knee a few years ago. TV, movies, but I mean, this sounds real contrived, but, my weekends, I just like going and running errands with my wife. We just kind of hang out doing stupid stuff as long as I know it sounds really
so
horrible.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's less sweet because it's really about me trying to get it on with her. It's like a long con. Is the more time I do that, I get to do stuff with her naughty bits, and so. But yeah, no, it's true. I just like to really do really mundane, stupid stuff as long as I'm with my wife.
You're a smart man.
I know, it sounds like that. I wish it wasn't. I wish it just happens to be true.
Do you take any road trips to California with her?
We do. We just did this weekend. We go to California. We just take road trips, and it's really not about going anywhere. It's horrible. I'm sorry, but we just like.
Are you seriously apologizing for enjoying spending time with your spouse?
We like being. I know it's, but it sounds so contrived and it sounds so fake, and I hate that. But it's just we like being. We like going on road trips so that we're in the car.
You are so sexist, Matt. You are being so sexist right now. Jeez. Can't even believe it.
No, it's good. I love it.
That's what we do.
All right. So this is going to be probably the most serious question I ask. And I don't know if you guys are ready for it. And I don't know how you want to handle it. I promise it'll be the only one. I'm curious if you guys are willing or able to share something vulnerable with the audience about you that maybe the audience wouldn't know. So something you've done you regret, something that's hard that's happened to you, something vulnerable, and this will be, I swear, the only kind of semi-serious question that I ask. And if you want to make a joke of it, that's cool too.
No, seriously. Like the other day I was looking for 5 smoke bombs and I only had 3 and I walked up behind somebody.
And you stabbed him.
I stabbed him. I mean, he was more vulnerable than I was. Or she, it was a little girl, but you know, so I got the smoke bombs. So,
all right, do you guys want to do this question? Are you all right with it?
Sure.
Just waiting for someone else to stall while I keep thinking.
Yeah. Let's
all right. I'm gonna start with Tom
because my honest answer is answer for thing. That's.
Oh my gosh!
Jesus!
Don't
you weren't gonna do that, Randy?
Oh, stop it!
No, I totally. It's just that you ask a question like that, and it's like that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And how do I top that?
Well,
like, how do I come
up? You don't
up?
Have to say the first thing that comes to your mind.
It. No, yeah. but it's like, what else is there?
That's awesome.
Anyway, you ask someone else first.
All right. So, Tom, going with you first.
Ooh. Okay. I tried to kill myself when I was a teenager.
Oh.
And I've always been, I've always kind of had this, I don't know if it's a fascination with suicide, but I had a friend that killed himself in 2011. And,
oh, this party really died.
But no, in 2011, I had a friend that killed himself, and then I became actively involved in the suicide support groups, and I volunteered for the suicide hotline for almost 2 years.
That's awesome.
So,
wow. All right, Tom, thanks for sharing. Jake.
Oh, does anyone else have one? I'm trying to think of one. I mean, I know
one for you.
Yes.
I'm not going to say. This is a weird line of questioning.
It's my only weird one.
Okay. I'm looking down the list, and you've got, is religion a net bad, and you think that we're finishing up at
I'm
part three.
I'm going to skip that one. Yeah. I'm going to skip that one. All right. So, Randy, come back to you.
Jeez.
Can I jump in? Do you want me to rescue you here?
Thank you.
So Scott. That's
Scott, yeah.
This isn't probably shocking to a lot of our listeners, and it's not something that's unique to me, certainly, having left the church. It's probably ubiquitous, in fact, to everybody, but you know, personally, for me, this whole process of leaving the church, like, we joke about it and we laugh about it a lot, but it's really, really hard. And I mean, even though I've been out publicly, you know, for a while, there's still ramifications for it, like, personally, like with me, with my family, with, you know, people that I'm really, really close to. And so even though we have that tone of levity in it, I want to just kind of, you know, I'll put that out there that it's tough for me. Like, it's not an easy thing even now to be going through.
I'll echo that. Yeah.
Actually, I'm ready to answer.
All right. Thanks, Scott. All right, Randy.
This is something I would really like to do a podcast on. The question of, are you happier now? Because I do hear a lot of ex-Mormons say they're so much happier now after they've left the church. And, you know, part of it is that I have inherited from my mother, a pretty high anxiety level. I haven't gone to a psychologist or a psychiatrist to deal with it. I kind of self-medicate because, you know, I can self-medicate with propranolol, which lowers my blood pressure. But I am anxiety ridden, and that hasn't really changed since I left the church. And, you know, I can't honestly say that I'm happier now than I was as a true believing Mormon. And I think that's an interesting topic to explore. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my confession. I'm not going to be one of those people that, one of those ex-Mormons that trumpets how much happier I am now than I was before, because I don't know if I am.
Mm-hmm.
But it really doesn't matter, because I can't go back. You know, the genie's out of the bottle. I can't put the genie back in. So I now have to exist in this world. And
so let me ask you this then. If you could go back, would you? If you could put the genie back in the bottle, would you?
No.
Okay. So that's, yeah. Because I've thought about the same thing. And I, even though you might not be happier now, if it's not a place that you'd rather go back to, I don't know. That's an interesting, it's an interesting difference.
Yeah, we had a podcast about the truth-seeking brain. To me, like, I wouldn't take that pill. What is it, the red or the blue pill from...
Blue pill would be going back, I think.
Yeah, I would not take the blue pill because the truth above my... I value the truth above my happiness, and that's something that is just ingrained in my DNA. So
yeah,
I wouldn't go back.
Wow. Thanks, Randy. I'm going to do this testimony meeting style. I'm going to wait and let the silence force you guys to come out. So I'm just going to be quiet and let you guys self-select.
All right. I'll go. This is Matt. So my vulnerable thing is I'm irrevocably broken. It's because I've seen things, I've talked to kids about things that nobody should talk to kids about. I've lived it, and as a result of that, I'm broken. And I just acknowledge that I'm damaged because of my job. So that's one vulnerable thing. The other thing is from leaving Mormonism is relationships are with my family are worse.
Yeah, and I actually kind of want to piggyback off that. So my family stumbled across the Brother Jake videos, and my immediate family and my mom actually listens to Infants on Thrones regularly, even though she's definitely a true believer. And the things that I'm doing, the things that I do in Brother Jake and that I do on Infants on Thrones, I feel like they are therapeutic from my end for processing this exit out of Mormonism. But doing it in the way that I've been doing it has damaged my relationship with them. And I'm kind of afraid that I'm burning that house down. You know, I'm burning that bridge for my own, you know, just to keep warm in this transitionary period. I don't know if things will ever recover from the kind of public ridicule that I've brought, or the public light of ridicule that I brought on the church. In their minds, I don't know if that'll ostracize me from them forever. And that's scary to me. And sometimes I wonder if I'm just being selfish, but I feel like I'd go crazy if I didn't do anything.
Yeah, I can relate to that a lot.
Mm. So, yeah.
Thank you, Jake.
Mental health, the personal mental health is more important to me. Just to piggyback on what Jake is saying.
Right.
I feel like every time we do one of these podcasts, there's a vulnerability because we use our real names. Like I use my name. I talk about where I live, you know, and I've got children. So, you know, there's times I worry about that and, you know, think, okay, this is out here. Anybody can listen to it. There could be somebody who isn't completely mentally stable, you know, in different ways than we're not mentally stable. And it could be dangerous. So there's times I worry about that a little bit and wonder if I've by doing this for as long as I've been doing it and saying things that I say that could upset, you know, some people if I'm putting myself or my kids in danger with it, you know, because it's really easy to be critical about things when you're on Reddit and you're using a fake name or, you know, in any place where there's that anonymity. But we strip that away. And so I kind of feel like anytime we have conversations, we're making ourselves vulnerable. So.
Yep. I relate to that too. All right, Bob.
Oh, gosh. I'm the caboose here. Wow, you know, the first thing that happened with me is I did the Randy thing where I'm like, okay, I can't talk about those five things. Sorry, what's number six on creepy Bob baggage that's okay for a podcast? No, I feel like we have a really good time on the podcast, and we have this banter thing going on where we're open and honest, and I mentioned it earlier. It's an outlet for me to really express myself and also get people to push back on me in a way that I didn't get in my normal growing up environment, or that I don't get quite in the same way at work or in other spheres that I'm participate in. But at the same time, deep down inside, I'm the guy who always wants to reconcile and write the super long emails until we actually do understand each other. And when that doesn't happen, which it has in life with certain people, and somebody just wants to walk away from me and rely on the last assumption they made or the last interaction where we weren't able to come to terms, it actually affects me, even though I want to admit that it doesn't, or I want to think it doesn't, but it really does. Like I'm somebody who wants approval more than I wish I did. So that's my thing that I don't want to admit, but I just admitted. How's that?
Yeah, 3.5.
I'll take it.
That's awesome. All right, guys. Thanks. That was really cool. So thanks for entertaining that question. All right. So now let's flip it. If you guys had to tell the audience something that's kind of cool about yourself, something that you're proud of, something that you would even be bragging about, that you may not want to say because you don't want to sound like a, you know, boaster or like an ass or whatever, but go ahead, like let it fly. So Matt, what's something you're proud of?
I'm proud of the work that I do.
Yeah.
I'm proud of how good I am at it. I think it's something I do very well, and I'm proud that people would probably not like to see me on the other side in the courtroom.
Yeah. So you protect children, right? I mean, that's kind of what you do.
Yeah. It's that's definitely awesome. a calling and something to get passionate about. It's easy to get worked up over, and I enjoy advocacy. I enjoy taking things that have very little evidence and being able to explain to juries how the real world works, and taking very little evidence and explaining why you should convict on the word of a child.
Yeah. All right, Glenn, what's something you're proud of?
Well, I'm proud of Infants on Thrones. And this might be a little bit vulnerable too, but I've always had a really strong creative urge, and when the internet was brand new, I mean, I think in 1997 I did a folklore webpage, and people would submit their stories, and I'd post them online, and that was kind of like a creative expression for me. I went through a phase where I wrote screenplays, and even tried to shop one of them quite seriously. Talked with a producer once, and came close. I got offered a job to ghostwrite a screenplay, and they were going to pay me $2,000 to do it. And I had to turn it down because I was in the middle of writing my master's thesis, and so I wasn't allowed to accept that job. But that was something. I've written music and play the guitar and sing, and I've probably written over 30, 40 songs. I haven't done it a lot lately, and so all those creative urges and talents or whatever have been channeled into Infants on Thrones and then Mormon Expression before that, and it's been really fulfilling. So it's something I'm very proud of and enjoy just that creating process. It's a lot of fun.
At the fear of sounding like I'm washing Glenn's balls, I actually think you're pretty good at some of that stuff, Glenn. And
you like my music because it's so much like Reznor?
No.
No, that's not what he said.
All right, Bob, you're next.
Of your screenplays.
Oh, what am I proud of? Before I sold out and started working for the man and got an MBA and did the like white male thing to make money, I had a couple of my own businesses, and I'm proud of the fact that every business I've started, I've exited successfully, making more money than I entered. Like, not millions, but successfully making money, and I've really enjoyed that. I love entrepreneurship, and I'll probably do it again someday. Right now, I'm just a little chicken shit and like the constant salary I get from a corporate gig. But I started a couple websites, had my own computer house call business back in the day. So that's kind of my little thing is I like starting businesses and selling them, I guess, but I'm not proud enough of it to not work because I still need money.
Sure. I have a lot of respect for people who can successfully start a business. That's good stuff. Scott.
Sure. This one might be a little bit more humble, but it's something that I'm proud of personally. So, I do a lot of home improvement, working with my hands kinds of things. I'm a big DIY kind of guy. Do, you know, work on my own cars, work on my own, you know, motor kind of stuff. Anything around the house. I've renovated bathrooms and things like that, re-roofed and done some pretty heavy-duty construction type work for somebody who, you know, sits in an office all day. So
I totally respect that stuff. That's good stuff. Randy.
Mine's going to sound totally cheesy, but it's going to be, you know, honest. The thing I'm most proud of is I have two biological kids, 6 and 8 year old, and they tell me pretty much every day that I'm the best dad in the world. A couple of times I've tried to show them that's objectively false.
Like the true best dad would.
Right. But the love and respect of my little ones is the thing I'm most proud of. It's the best thing I've ever done.
That's awesome.
Jake? Told you it's going to be cheesy.
No, that's good. Jake?
Well, this... Yeah, I guess this is something I don't really get to say, but I'm very, very proud of Brother Jake. And this is... Because I started doing Brother Jake with basically coming from no writing experience whatsoever, no filmmaking experience whatsoever, you know, just basically starting from nothing to some idea that I had one day. And I've never advertised it anywhere. I've never paid for ads. I've never other than just upload the videos to YouTube and post them on a couple places. You know, I'll throw them up on Reddit or something like that. And then maybe occasionally I'll post them on Facebook and some of the Mormon places. But all of the following that it's gotten so far has been completely organic. I haven't really been pushed it or done anything like that with it at all. And it's become kind of a meme of the fringy kind of post-Mormon community. I was actually very flattered when Kate Kelly referred to it. She said super VIP heaven in her Mormon Stories interview. I don't know if you remember that, John. But
yep, I do.
I was like, yeah, that was a big very satisfying for me, even though she probably hates Infants on Thrones now. Oh, well. I still got it.
We still got Brother Jake.
Right. Anyway, but I am proud of that. That's something that really came to fruition in a way that I didn't anticipate at all. So
you should be proud of it,
Jake, because I like bragging on you and telling you how, hey, one of my buddies, Brother Jake, and in fact, we do a podcast together. I love it, dude.
Mm. I'm sorry I'm not producing more on Infants on Thrones, man. I didn't realize I was letting you down. I gotta get.
I'm giving you shit, dude. What have I done lately? Come on.
Yeah, I'm actually in total awe of like how Jake is so young but so talented, and like I'm just so happy that he's part of the podcast.
Agreed.
That's awesome. All right, Tom.
I think I mentioned it before. I'm actually very proud, and I've hardly told anybody this, of getting involved with the Suicide Crisis Center for almost 2 years or whatever.
Yeah.
That was a tough deal. It was when I lost my friend, I kind of felt like maybe it's part of, you know, going through my crisis of faith where I felt like I was going through this. I was relying on, you know, guys like you via your podcast, John, and getting involved with Mormon Expression and talking to Bob McHugh. I felt like I needed to pay that forward. And when it came to suicide, it just hit me so hard. I just felt like I needed to pay that forward. And so, you know, it was a huge sacrifice for me and my family because I was taking overnight shifts and hours after work, and I wouldn't get home till pretty late. But it was just something that I felt so called to do. And at the, you know, there were some phone calls that we would get in, and I would hang up, and I, it was so touching to me because I felt like I was making a difference, even if it was just a handful of people here and there. But, you know, if somehow I could reach through the ether and touch someone, then I felt like that was giving meaning to my life. And I don't know, that was that for me personally, that was just a big thing for me. I talked to my wife about really being called to do it, and she was 100% supportive. And my dad actually told me at lunch, you know, a couple months ago, that he was incredibly touched and proud of me for doing that, because he's like, I could never do that. I mean, taking phone calls from someone who's, you know, up to their eyeballs in depression and whatnot, and they want to take their life, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to take that phone call. It's I don't know, talking to people at that very, very, very vulnerable place is it's something that it's tough. It's really, really tough. And I had to go through training and all that, but
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's incredible, Tom. And seriously, the mental fortitude of talking to somebody at that moment in their life, I can't even imagine that. That's serious stuff.
Well, you know, and I think I don't know. Part of it is because, and there is a handful of us, and it seems like suicide is just becoming more and more common, unfortunately. But it's one of those preventable things. It really, really is. And when my friend killed himself, it took me so long to go through the stages of anger and regret. And I mean, I was so angry because it feels like such a selfish thing when it hits you so personal. Because you think, why didn't he just reach out to me? Why didn't I just make that one phone call? And why did I feel like I could have been a better friend to him in those moments? And it leaves such a wake of destruction behind for everyone. It's so horrible.
But do you think it's happening more that we're finally willing to talk about it and explore it, and so it seems like it's at the forefront too so often now?
Yeah, but I also think that I don't know. I don't know the statistics, but it seems like it goes in waves. You know, with the economy crashing, I remember it being very, very high right around then. And luckily, you know, gay awareness is becoming more and more accepted, and so that's a good thing. But, you know, there's just times. I do know for a fact that Utah County is a hotbed for suicide, and it's just a combination of factors. You know, it could be anywhere from religious pressures to gay, you know, being in the closet, not being able to be accepted, and, you know, prescription overdoses, and just societal pressures and financial pressures and all that stuff. And most of the time, the stuff that I would encounter, it was mostly, you know, just hardcore depression and family pressures, really.
Yeah, I mean, John, you can speak to this since you're a professional, but people don't kill themselves in a selfish state of mind usually. Most of the time, they're suffering from severe depression, and it's not that they want to kill themselves. It's not that they want to stop living. It's that they want the pain to stop. I'm very reticent to ever. And I know you didn't mean it in this way, Tom, but to pass judgment on people being selfish and killing themselves. Some people are because, you know, they got caught in something. They don't want to deal with the consequences of it, so they kill themselves. But most of the time, people are just suffering from severe depression, and they just want to stop suffering.
No, absolutely. And I didn't mean to make it sound like that is reality. It just feels that way.
Right. It felt that way for you as a friend.
Yeah,
right?
It did, because when it happened, you know, you're dealing with the loss of someone who's close to you, but then you're also dealing with this bitterness and anger and like, why does this have to be? Because it's so senseless. It didn't have to be this way. It is preventable.
You're dealing with the guilt of what else could I have done, right?
Yeah, because you're taking a lot of the burden on yourself, unnecessarily, of course. Because, like you said, it's taken me a long time to really accept the fact that, you know, my friend and myself are probably have a lot more in common than I like to admit. Because if I was dealing with something where I was planning to kill myself, I don't think I'd go to my closest friend and say, hey, I'm thinking about killing myself. You want to talk me out of it? That usually doesn't happen. Yeah. It's usually someone that you just kind of have to watch for signals. It, you know, like they become more introverted and they kind of become more isolated. You have to watch for those signals and then you have to take a proactive approach and say, hey, you want to go hang out and just talk and just let them kind of bring it up on their own. And hopefully they will, because sometimes they won't. But
yeah. Brilliant. That was really cool. Thanks for entertaining those two questions. All right, let's shift gears, and we're going to end by talking about our favorite topic, which is Mormonism. So we'll have a bit of a free-for-all as we close. I'm going to start with the question that one of the listeners asked. If you guys had to choose between helping the church improve or seeing it go up in flames, which would you pick? And I'm going to just open it up to the quorum to discuss.
Well, it's easy to assume that you can hold things constant and you know, not think of your family and the cost, the situation that they would be in. If you can think of the church as that other, then sure, go up in flames. But there's still too many people who are close to me for me not to wrestle with what I would really want. So in a perfect world, I would love it if I could get my family out to watch the burning building with me. But that's an easy answer, of course.
Is this Scott or Bob? Was that Scott or Bob?
That was Bob.
Okay, that was Bob. All right.
So what does it mean for it to improve, though? Like what? Because for me, in order for the church to be a healthy information, it would have or a healthy place for people to be. It would, parts of it would definitely have to burn. You know, there you would have to burn out all of that literal believing, self-congratulatory, aren't we awesome? You know, and then what would you have? What would the sacrament talks be if it wasn't self-validation, every single topic, just a different flavor of it?
Right.
You know, and there's so much of that self-congratulatory, validate, going back to Jake's question in the last 5 minutes of Elders Quorum, why do we have to have the priesthood that every single person in the world needs in order to get into heaven? How are you going to get past that, where all you are is a charitable group of people that are doing good in your community, and you have this common heritage of Mormonism that's your DNA and shared? I mean, what would that be? You'd have to burn out so much of it to get to that healthy place. So I don't know.
And having it change, having it improve, I mean, it's an improvement from my perspective, but a lot of the things that I would have it improve would be the things that the people that I love, like Bob was talking about, the people that I love that are in the church, that they take very seriously, you know, and that they, that things that they get utility from, in the church, like a literal belief in the Book of Mormon. I personally would want that to change, but that's just so that I would feel more comfortable at church. But, you know, I have people in my family that are very, tied, that get a lot of utility out of that particular idea. So it's hard to say if we're really going for one or the other. I don't know. It just seems so relative.
And like, if you think about ordained women, you know, like the measure of improvement there is that gender equality is balanced out in the church so that women have the priesthood too. Is that an improvement? Yeah, it's an improvement where you've got equality. But to me, the whole priesthood, what is priesthood then? Is it still the
hierarchy?
Yeah. Well, not just the hierarchy, but you know, like one of the things in my slow burn out was a realization that Jesus's atonement was really, really powerful to forgive anybody of any sins, but it's dormant. It's dormant in the world until the Mormon priesthood activates it. And that really, really bothered me. It just seemed so egocentric, ethnocentric, that we're putting ourselves above Jesus. As yeah, he's pretty powerful, but it doesn't have any effect until we say so, you know. And so, is that still the priesthood? What the priesthood is, even though women have it, and is that an improvement in the church as far as the one true you know, elitist claims. So, yeah, it's a tricky question for me, John.
What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I don't buy either of those things. I want Mormonism to be irrelevant and have as little effect and impact on the world. So I guess to the extent that means burn it down, maybe that's my answer. But I want it, along with other religions, to have less impact because I think there will be less damage, less pain to people. So I want it to be irrelevant, yet here I am talking about it a couple times a week.
So you'd rather than burning it down, you'd want it to wither.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Scott?
I want people to make their own choice. I want people to have options. I want people to know that, you know, the Book of Abraham papyri is out there. And if people choose to stay in the church, then that's fine. But I think it's inevitable that it's going to go up in flames, and I'd rather see it happen before too many generations go by with this kind of painful degradation. So, yeah, if there were some kind of, like, event that just made it so that everybody could move on, that'd be great.
Randy?
This is a hard question for me because...
your dad is so awesome.
Yeah, he is. you met him. You also met his wife, who thought that the only reason men turned gay is because they didn't have any luck with the ladies.
Well, isn't there some truth to that, Randy?
And John and I looked at each other, and it was this weird moment. Like, are you going to do it? Am I going to do it? Are we going to take on this Fox News conservative? But to me, it's like, it's so hard because it's, you're weighing the suffering of the minority versus the joy of the majority. And, you know, because I'm such a champion of, and I always have been since I was a kid, I was always the kid that took pride in, you know, defending kids from bullies. It's just part of my DNA. And because of how acute the pain is for the minority, and the fact that the majority could probably find joy in other places, I probably would like to see the church burn down. But if it happened too quickly, if it was like a total apocalyptic burn down, I think that'd be too painful for too many people. So I guess what I'm rooting for is a gradual withering of the church and its significance and its messages that are so misogynistic and homophobic and so fearful of the outside world, i.e. apostates. So I don't know. Is that even an answer?
It's awesome. Yeah, Tom, do you have anything to add? Jake, you already spoke, right?
Yeah.
I would just pretty much echo what Matt and Randy said. I'd like to see the people, the members, reduce the power and influence that the church has over them, and obviously the, you know, indirect consequence, the church kind of wither a little bit.
Something that I heard, I think it was Sam Harris, but I'm sure it's any of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, say, is that they kind of viewed, you know, liberals or progressives within a religious tradition as being like the worst of all possible positions. And I think I heard John Larson say this recently as well. Do you guys feel that way? That like NOMs, New Order Mormons, or liberals or progressives are like actually damaging?
Yeah, we did a whole episode on what we call damn liberals, where we went round and round on this. So I think we're kind of all over the map.
That was about a year ago, though. So are we still in the same place as we were then?
I don't know.
Sam Harris's argument is that sensible liberal believers give cover to the extremists because they make make it look like believing is something that's reasonable, which gives cover to the believers that are extremists. And I don't buy that argument at all. Everyone's personal experience is their personal experience. You know, can I look at someone like John Hamer and say he's giving cover to someone like one of the Lafferty brothers? That makes no sense to me. So, I don't buy that. Because he believes in a God? Yeah, John Hamer is a liberal believer.
Okay.
Do you think he's giving cover to the Lafferty brothers?
No, I don't.
There you go. It's a ridiculous, to me, that's...
It is.
It's a ridiculous hypothesis.
Yeah. We were able to knock that straw man down, like... Easy.
I know it was a straw man, but do the rest of you believe that people that are liberal and sensible, they believe in evolution, but they still believe in Jesus? Guys like Mike Bond, do you believe that they give cover to extremists?
Oh,
no,
well,
I don't think so.
Yeah, but I think there's some more nuanced discussion there. Like, I mean, the infamous Bill Maher episode with Sam Harris and Ben Affleck getting his panties in a bunch. that's a little more nuanced than,
that's,
you know,
that's a pretty sexist thing to say, panties in a bunch.
Jeez, edit that out.
Get rid of that baggage, man.
Bob is the one feminist on the panel.
I can't even make my point anymore.
No, it's all right. It's all right. All right. So I think we'll refer our listeners to that episode. Damn liberals. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I really have a tough time finding much empathy for the ordained women crowd, for example, because it's just, as I keep saying all the time, if you want the priesthood, take mine. I mean, here, you can have this. You can have this thing that has no effect, no impact, no real tangible thing. And I understand the argument, but it is real and tangible because you give it power. And that's the point. You give it power.
But it's the voice. It's like the being looked at as a leader and that kind of peer. Being able to attain to that more than any power, I think, with them. But absolutely.
But it's why if you are in a church, you are in an organization that devalues you so much, why are you asking for scraps? And that, so I do have a difficult time with that piece of it. But that's a little different question. People who are looking to change what I think is just a fundamentally flawed.
Yeah.
Organization.
And this is kind of a running discussion that I don't think we've ever completely taken head on, but it pops up from time to time, and whether religion is a net negative or a net positive, you know, we've talked about it a couple times. I think your position on that issue is really going to color that your answer to that question, John. You know,
sure.
Like if you think the noms are giving cover, then you're kind of assuming that it's a net negative, I think. I think going back to Randy's original comment with it, everybody has their own experience in the religion, and I don't know that people are looking to others to really validate them as much, especially when you grow up in it and it becomes your world and this little bubble that you just live in and you're happy with. So why change it? I don't know. So,
right. Okay. Okay, so this is a question that's purely indulgent for me. I'm curious to hear what you guys think. But I think about, you know, just the past 10 years that I've been trying to be involved in kind of Mormonism publicly, Mormon culture. You know, it felt like early on, like, you know, Bob with the blogger knackle, you know, we were all thinking about the promise of what the internet could do. And then blogs started really proliferating and there was competition. And there was a time where like blogs were the thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there were these blog aggregators and people would get excluded from them or included. And
Mormon Archipelago.
Yeah. People really paid attention to those things. And then at some point, you know, podcasts started to emerge and started to really get some traction. And it felt like the podcast started to really suck the life out of blogging to some extent.
I thought you were just going to leave it at suck.
Yeah. Well, no. And then the blogs are still going, but they seem to have a lot less gravitas than they used to. And then Facebook came and kind of blew everything up. I'm not even mentioning the forums, the internet forums that existed before the blogs and the podcasts. And these are all still going. But then, you know, sometimes I feel like, wow, look how far we've come in 10 years. There's like, you know, dozens of Mormon-themed podcasts, and the blogs are kind of petering out. Now the church has finally come clean with its essays. I do think that all of us played a role in that. You know, that's just my opinion. You know, John Larson said recently that he felt that that was hubris, but I do think that we all kind of played a role. But then I have a hard time thinking about, you know, now the church has come clean on the essays. They've kind of drawn some lines in the sand. They're not going to budge on homosexuality. They're not going to budge on women's ordination. I kind of wonder, where are we and where are we going? Is everything going to keep really accelerating and things are going to kind of explode? Or are we all just going to kind of get tired and peter out? Like, where are we and where do you guys think we're going in terms of, you know, kind of social media and Mormonism? Anyone want to take that on?
I'll start. I disagree that the LDS.org essays are progress. I mean, I haven't thought about it that much, but is there anything new that they're providing that hasn't been out there in some form, even if it's an apologetic forum? I don't know. It doesn't seem like they're really owning anything. They're just saying, yeah, there's people out there that are saying negative stuff. Here's kind of what it is, but here's your answer to it so we can ignore it and move on. Nothing to see here.
Well, I'll just tell you let me jump in because I read Fawn Brody. I read, you know, Michael Quinn. I read Greg Palmer all back in like 2000, 2001, right? Mm. But for some reason, the thing that was most that I remember as being most devastating to me was reading Richard Bushman's Joseph Smith and the Beginnings of Early Mormonism, because when you read all that difficult history, but you're reading it through someone that isn't sort of church sanctioned, there's always in the back of your mind like, well, maybe it's not true, and maybe it's being spun, and maybe there's a way to get out of this. But for me, when a patriarch and the church's foremost authority on Joseph Smith is acknowledging all the hard stuff, for me, that's when the cards really started falling. And so I would just say, I mean, I don't mean to disagree on Infants on Thrones, but I guess that's my job on Infants on Thrones is to disagree. So, Glenn, I'm going to say you're full of shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm just joking. But the reason why is because I think that now we can point to LDS.org and say polyandry, and we can point to LDS.org and say the word Abraham doesn't appear anywhere in the papyri.
Well, so I guess then we're asking what are you defining as progress? You know, I mean, because if progress is just that the church is starting to own up to some of the difficult things from official anonymous sources on LDS.org. We still don't know exactly who it is. They're not saying it over the pulpit in general conference. It's like Fair or Farms 3.0 that now it's on LDS.org hidden where people can't really see it and it doesn't really, you know, it's an inoculation attempt. So if they come out in general conference and, you know, ask Holland next time you have lunch with him to talk about this, the essays in general conference, and then I'll say, yeah, I'm full of shit. But, you know, okay. maybe it's a little bit of progress. I see your point. I just don't see that it's that monumental. But I do agree that the ease of access to information and people being able to get on and do podcasts like we have and other people have created such a noise and clamor that the church has had to respond to it somehow, and this is how they've responded to it. But I don't know. I don't get the progress. I just don't see
it. I'm gonna agree with John because I still go to church and the essays have been mentioned in sacrament talks.
Well, that's so, the question I had is John, what percentage of bishops, let's call them Mordor, Idaho, Utah, Arizona, and California, what percentage of the bishops even know they exist?
Yeah, I don't know. I want to say over half, but what do you think?
Really? That's generous.
I emailed my old bishop when the polyandry one came out because he straight up told me that was false when I was going through my faith crisis. Hmm. And so I emailed it to him and was really polite and asked him if he knew anything about it. And he didn't have a clue.
And I know for a fact that our bishop in Bloomington right now has never even read the Book of Mormon. So I doubt he knows what's on LDS.org. He's my former father-in-law, so I kind of know a little bit about him. But
okay. Way to out him that way. Nice.
That's not his reason that's for being typical, in the church. Though. It's not typical.
Well, I think this kind of goes back to the question that John asked earlier about whether we'd like to see the church change or improve or burn down or whatever or wither. In terms of progress toward the church burning down or withering, I agree. It's not really – I mean, I can see Glenn's point. It's not like it's causing this mass exodus because it's not something that's well known. But in terms of alleviating – vindicating the concerns that many who've had faith crisis such as ourselves have had and alleviating some of that cognitive dissonance that some people feel – I think that it is progress. So I guess that's me being diplomatic.
But it's progress in the sense that they had to put something out to say, look, we weren't hiding anything. Look, you know, it's only for people that are like struggling and have come across information and they can just say, look, it's been here all along, you know.
And here are some more support beams for your shelf.
Right. Exactly. But it's not something that is announced over the pulpit. And I would submit that way less than 50% of the bishops in the United States alone, way less than 50% of the bishops have any clue that they exist. Because you can't just go to LDS.org and find them. You have to get a link to find them. Somebody has to send you a link.
Right.
They are
burying
this shit as much as they can as per their MO for the last 50 years.
But we're getting stuck on like the particulars of the here and now of a very specific moment in time. And I think John's original question is really interesting. Like, where are we? What's happening? What's happened in the last 10 years? Where are the next 10 years? Where are we going to go? What's the trajectory for Mormonism? And, you know, I'm maybe the analogy guy. I like making analogies. I think of Mormonism as Fox News. Like, it's never going to go away, or it'll take a long time for it to go away. And it's an older demographic that's participating the most. But as people die off and younger people leave and find better sources, there's just going to be less relevant. So I think that we're seeing the hints of that. It's just going to take a while. And in the meantime, we've got, just because I like the analogy, we have John Larson playing the character of Bill Maher. We've got Brother Jake as Colbert. We've got Infants on Thrones as Jon Stewart. We've got John DeLynn. If I want to be nice, I'll give you Anderson Cooper. If I want to be mean, I'd give you Wolf Blitzer.
Well, Anderson Cooper.
Ouch.
On handsomeness,
ouch.
I'd say.
Yeah. Anderson's quite the catch.
No, we're all doing our own little thing, and it could be like just thoughts from the peanut gallery, and nothing's changing. I've seen, extending the analogy, I've seen Jon Stewart. You know, people call him out and be like, "Hey, what are you doing? Are you just having a good time? Are you impacting change? Do you think, you know, people are listening? The government's going to change the
but you're,
situation."
You're making
in politics.
These analogies, but it's on a much smaller scale.
Oh, of course. Of course. I'm just doing it for fun. It's not like we're really that nearly as impactful because COB.
I know. I'm just trying to get to a point where we can ask John about his numbers.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you want to know my numbers?
Yeah. Whip it out.
I think. I think any given episode that we release within a, let's just say, a month of it being out, probably is at about 40,000, 50,000 downloads.
Wow.
For the single episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
But some go higher. Some can go as high as 80, 90, or 100,000. It just depends on whether it's like a really blockbuster episode or just kind of one of the run of the mills. But for some reason, the number 40, 50,000 on average after a month or two of the episode being downloaded is where I am. And of course, I don't know how many people, how many actual listeners that represents, but I do feel like Mormon Stories has penetrated within, like, in the U.S., let's just say 3 to 5 people in every ward have heard of Mormon Stories.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And so if you extrapolate that for how many wards there are in the U.S., I want to say 25,000. you know, I think, and that's just Mormon Stories. There's Kate Kelly. I think she's reached even more people than I have in terms of just name awareness, you know? Mm. And, you know, so I have a hard time. Sometimes I want to feel like all of us together, and I'm talking Sunstone Dialogue, Mormon History Association, the Blogger Knuckle, all the forums, all the podcasts. Sometimes I want to feel like we've really made a dent. And then sometimes I actually feel like we should just give up. We haven't even made a dent. And I honestly,
but why? Like, but John, I mean, because I think this is where our motivations are a little bit different. Like, what do you want to make a dent in, and why aren't you just doing it because you love talking with these people and you're getting really good stuff?
No, I'm not doing this for the money. I'm not doing this for the press. I'm not doing it for the media. I'm not doing it for the attention. I'm doing this for kind of what Scott said. I think every single Mormon on this planet has the right to know the factual record as it relates to the church's origins. And everyone should be able to make a conscious decision as to, with all the information on the table, as to whether or not they want to engage. And if they have all the information and the context that allows them to see the information for what it is, and then they decide to stay a member, then I'm like, hooray, love your Mormonism. But if people are being held to Mormonism because of coercion or deception or because of pressure, then I think that's abusive, and I want people liberated, and that is why I've been doing it from the very first day, and that's why I'm still clinging to the podcast with my clenched fist.
Well, and I think that's also, you know, you've been called the safe podcast, right? And you use this really cheesy intro music that drives me nuts every time I try and listen to it. But it's to create that safe space where a Mormon who's never had to struggle with hard questions could come on and go, all right, I'm feeling a little awkward, but I'm going to push through. Whereas, like, coming onto Infants on Thrones, they'd be like, nah, uh-uh. No, that's too much. Too much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But sorry, John. To me, it sounds like a little bit of a naive position. You cited Michael Shermer earlier. Why people believe weird things, or, you know, he has a couple of books like that. And one of his points is that you can't reason people out of a position that they didn't reason themselves into in the first place.
No, but he's just making information available.
No, but Randy, I wasn't speaking comprehensively, because that has been one of the I don't want to say genius of, but that has been the strategic objectives of Mormon Stories. A story isn't just information. A story is this narrative that people take you on, where as they take you on it, you not only gain information, but the story hooks you.
Yeah.
And you start to feel emotion. And so that's why I've stuck so much to stories. That's why I started with stories, because I felt like stories would penetrate deeper than factual information ever would.
Well, that's a really good answer.
Yeah, yeah, no. I don't know that I've ever heard you put me in my place that way, John.
You put me in my place.
No. I'm not trying to put anyone in your place.
But you did.
It's easy.
I mean, maybe I've been holding my cards a little bit close to my vest. I honestly, sometimes I feel like I'm the most authentic guy in the world, and sometimes I feel like I'm super dishonest and deceptive, because I have been trying to think strategically from the very start, and I've been trying to, like, be objective, but I know that I'm not objective, but I've tried to play both sides, but I know that I'm not on one side. But then I've genuinely had changes in my position over time, and I've had to try and mask that or think of the greater good. And sometimes I've been convinced one way or the other. So it's just been a huge mess for me. Mm-hmm. But through it all, I've wanted stories to penetrate with both information and emotion to then allow people to free them. I mean, the analogy I've always thought about is Harriet Tubman freeing people from slavery. And I'm not saying Mormonism is slavery, but I want to free them from the bondage of sort of unenlightened, unaware subjugation. You
want to provide the information so if people stumble across it, they can have access, and then they can make a choice.
And the emotional experience that disentangles them to the point where they might feel like they are awake enough and enlightened enough to then be able to make that conscious decision. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and I even said this, Glenn, you said I'm very easy to put in my place.
Just because I like teasing you. And that was one of the questions that people got. Why do we tease Randy? So it's because we love you.
It is because we love you.
But one of the things that, that I brought up in that podcast, the Truth Seeking Brain, was you have to have an emotional break from the church at some level before you even entertain the information. And that's brilliant. Like, John, you totally enlightened me on your approach. And
and you've been listening for 7 years.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, John, are you kind of resigned to your fate at this point, where you see the writing on the wall, you think excommunication, it's gonna happen. I'm not gonna try and talk my way around it this time. If they're gonna bring it, then bring it.
Oh, I'm already there. I mean, I was 100% candid with my former stake president.
Yeah.
But with this one, I've been really obviously kind of bold and strident with him, both privately and publicly. But, you know, it's funny because you guys mentioned the Briar Patch in your interview. And it is one thing that's true. And that's that back when Oakes gave his talk last October, that's two Octobers ago now, that kind of sent me over the edge. There was this moment where I was like sitting in a restaurant and I said, I have to get comfortable with the fact that they might excommunicate me. Okay. That's it. I'm comfortable.
Just 2 years ago?
Well, it would have been about a year and a half ago, or I don't know.
Still.
But yeah, I had to get to the point, and it did take me that long to get to the point where I said, you know what? If they excommunicate me, I'm okay with it. Because what happened was I was living under this illusion for many years. I was trying to, you know, free the members was always my first goal, but help the church. If the church could change as a byproduct, that would make me happy. You know what I mean? And so I always had this illusion that, oh, they're getting more progressive on the gay issue. They're starting to be more open about their history. But when Oakes gave that talk that made it really clear that they were going to be doubling down on LGBT issues and doubling down on other types of issues, and they were actually regressing and retrenching, that's when something snapped in me. And I said, as long as I felt like they were moving in the right direction to a significant degree, I'm going to be willing to work with them and try and help reform. But if they're going to double down, I'm done. And that's when it snapped for me. And I said, at this point, if they excommunicate me, I'll be okay with that. Because if they're going to double down, they're going to hurt too many people, and I'm not going to stand for that anymore. And that's when I started doing more of the strident things. It's when I wrote Oaks Fail, you know, on Facebook. It's when I started saying, I'm going to do the unthinkable. I'm going to publicly criticize the church leaders and reap the whirlwind of that. And I've been more and more open and public ever since. And so, yeah, I've been ready for about a year or more, feeling like I'll be at peace if they excommunicate me. But that's not to say that it's something that I want and that I'm begging for them to do, because I think it's a brutal and inhumane process. There's still a huge chunk of me psychologically that still feels emotionally tied to Mormonism. There's still a lot of people that I think would feel hurt. And so it's always something where there's mixed motivations for me.
Yeah.
And so when I hear you guys say that I'm acting like the Briar Rabbit or whatever, it's true that there's a part of me that's like, bring it on. If you want to bring it on, bring it on. But there's another part of me that still feels like I'd be kind of sad. But overall, yeah. I made peace with that a little over a year ago. Yeah,
but they've got a mark. They've got, this is their last quiver, right? Their last shot to marginalize you to people who you can have influence on, like they did with Kate Kelly, and you're kind of the last one there. John Larson, he's done it to himself.
He resigned.
Right. He did it to himself. We've done it to ourselves just by our tone, if nothing else.
Well, we're aiming for we've got very different objectives than what John just talked about.
Oh, absolutely. So,
you know, John, I know you used to hesitate to talk about times where you had met with Holland, you know, in a public thing. Do you still have those kinds of interactions? Like, do you have, like, I made the joke earlier about having lunch with him, but do you still have those kinds of interactions? Is that part of your life?
No. I've had two lunches with Elder Holland and no correspondence with him since. And I have emailed him on occasion. I definitely emailed Holland when I found out Daniel Peterson was writing the hit piece.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got the impression that Holland was involved in that whole deal of ultimately Daniel Peterson being removed. I don't have hard evidence of that, but I got some indirect evidence from people who were involved. But then when I was then corresponding with my stake president, the last real direct conversation I got, the stake president told an area authority to tell my stake president to tell me that Holland said to never mention him again in public in any way in association with me.
Wow.
What was the timing of those meetings and his Book of Mormon crawl over, under, around?
That was a long time ago.
Holland gave that talk between my first and my second lunch with him.
Oh, interesting.
And that's what was so disappointing.
Yeah.
Because when I had my first lunch with Holland, I was so hopeful. He said he wanted a big tent. He wanted everybody in it. He seemed very progressive. What do you mean?
He doesn't know what that means. He'd have a big tent. He's just trying to placate you.
He was, but I felt like it was sincere at the time. Yeah. But then he gave that Book of Mormon talk, and I'm like, who is this guy? How in the world can he make me feel like he wants progressives in the church and then turn around and give that talk to the church?
Yeah.
So my second meeting, I was a little bit more strong with him, but I ultimately just got the sense that he was a bit of a politician, frankly.
Right.
You know, that he was really good at making people feel good when he was with them.
One-on-one.
But that you didn't get a real sense for the conviction of how he was going to act, because he was going to act in whatever way he felt like it was going to benefit the church.
I'm assuming you saw that BBC piece with him where he's sitting across from the interviewer and he's not doing well.
Apostles rarely speak to the media, but I get to meet one of the Quorum of Twelve, Elder Holland.
Joseph Smith got these papyri and he translated them. And subsequently, as the Egyptologists cracked the code, something completely different.
All I'm saying is that what got translated into the Word of God. The vehicle for that I do not understand and don't claim to know, and know no Egyptian.
As a matter of historical fact, was Joseph Smith convicted of being a con man in 1826?
I have no idea.
There's a court record in New York. And we've got an email of it.
There's a good deal of difficulty in the early frontier life in America. But that's an incidental matter to the character and integrity of the man.
Let's talk about Mitt Romney.
Okay.
The man who may well become the most powerful man on earth.
Mm-hmm.
As a Mormon in the temple, I've been told, he would have sworn an oath to say that he would not pass on what happens in the temple lest he slit his throat. Is that true?
That's not true. That's not true. We do not have penalties in the temple.
You used to.
We used to.
Therefore, he swore an oath saying, I will not tell anyone about the secrets here, lest I slit my throat.
Well, the vow that was made was regarding the ordinance of the temple.
It sounds Masonic, sir. It sounds Masonic.
Well, it's comparable. It's similar to a Masonic relationship.
The most powerful man in the world has sworn an oath, which he meant at the time, whatever it is now, that he must not tell anyone about what he's seen, lest he slit his throat.
That he would not tell anyone about his personal pledge to the Lord. I'm assuming that any religious candidate, an evangelical, a Roman Catholic, Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, President Obama, I'm assuming that anybody who has a relationship to God has made a pledge of some kind to God. There'd be some kind of loyalty to God, or what kind of a God is that?
We did talk to a number of people who've left the church, more than 30, and there is a massive gap between what they've told me and what you're telling me.
Well, when we all get together, that'd help. If you'll give me that list, and if you want to sit with us, let's go get them together and let's talk.
What they said to me, that they believe the Mormon Church is a cult. They believe it's a cult like the Church of Scientology, but actually it's smarter and more powerful.
Well, I guess if that's what they believe, it's probably a good thing they chose to leave it. Because we're not a cult. I'm not an idiot. You know, I've read a couple of books and I've been to a pretty good school. And I have chosen to be in this church because of the faith that I feel and the inspiration that comes.
No, I'm not calling you a cult. I'm just saying that I've met people who used to be in the church.
I've met people. And if people want to call us a cult, they can call us a cult and you can call us a cult. But we are 14 million and growing. And I'd like to think that your respect for me would be enough to know that this man doesn't seem like a dodo.
Yeah, that was a huge confirmation of my experience with him because he was totally not credible and he embarrassed himself. And I can see why none of the apostles have given a substantive interview since.
Is that the dodo comment?
Yeah,
I think I'm a dodo.
I've read a few books, and I think I went to a pretty good school.
I went to a pretty good school.
But he also said something there about, like, you know, with the ex-Mormons who have criticism. He's like, well, get them together. Let's, you know, we'll have a talk. You know, and it's like, to me, that when you said the big tent Mormonism thing, John, that was what popped into my mind when he said that. Like, he doesn't really know what it means to get everybody together and have a talk and let's really validate everybody's concerns. He can't possibly do that. And so, like, I wonder how devious any of these guys like Holland, the apostles, are, or how just completely naive and faithful they really are to their callings and their sense of themselves, and they just really are out of touch with people who have genuine concerns with the church. Do you have any insight into that?
I think it's mixed. I think more and more they have no cover. I mean, everything's out there so much, and now the church is publishing it. The apostles had to, as I understand it, they actually reviewed and approved these essays. So they've got smaller and smaller cover to kind of claim like they're hiding behind. But I think we're all speculating, but I think they just love the church and believe it's good, and they'll do anything they can to protect it. And as Upton Sinclair said, it's hard to get a man to have a point of view when his livelihood depends on not having it.
Yeah.
And there's just way too much at risk for them to ever concede or backtrack. And so I think they'll fight it to the end. But I think in the backs of their minds, they know that there's some serious problems.
So like an Elder Eyring would kind of chuckle under his breath when President Monson is sworn in. Brother Jack, we haven't talked about Brother Jack as a cultural meme yet. I don't think that's penetrated.
Quite got there yet.
Yeah, well, I just don't know why any of these grassroots movements are surprised, like Kate Kelly, by the reaction. When you have an institution where the leaders are chosen by outliving their peers. So the 15 most powerful people in the church, their morality and how they see the world is from the 50s and 60s. That's how old they are, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a patriarchal gerontocracy. And I just don't understand how anyone thinks that a grassroots movement are going to move these men when they're dealing with men that are old and entrenched. And the natural reaction of anyone, all of us, the natural reaction when your whole worldview is attacked is to retrench. So why is anyone surprised that they retrench?
Well, I just don't get that. I think it's because they're approaching it with their hope and with their faith and their love of the church, then that's what they want. They want to be able to keep the church.
And I bet a lot of them wouldn't describe their reaction as surprise, but as disappointment. I mean, you can still have that optimism and that disposition to act, even if you're not surprised if it doesn't necessarily work out for you.
Yeah, but disappointment comes with an actual hope that it would be otherwise.
But they're not seeing the leaders the way that you're describing them, Randy. They don't see them that way, as like a gerontocracy that they're, you know, jockeying.
I don't know why they don't.
It's ordained, like ordained women, they believe in the priesthood, right? So they believe at some level these men are inspired, that there's some divinity in the structure.
Why didn't you see it before you saw it?
That's a good question. I guess because it was something that was taught to me from since I was a little kid. But
and you loved it, right?
These are not people that are ignorant of the facts.
Were you?
Once I was not ignorant of the facts, I left.
Right.
So these are people that are not ignorant of the facts. They know how the system works. They're educated. They're intelligent people. And then they look at it, and then they think they can exact change from a grassroots level. And then they're surprised or hurt that it doesn't work out the way they want it to. So if you're comparing 19-year-old Randy on his mission to Kate Kelly, that's not a fair comparison.
Because you're a man.
No, Kate Kelly was way more informed. Kate Kelly is way more informed and intelligent than I was at 19. So you're trying to say, well, why didn't you see it when you were 19?
I was making a joke, Randy. He's kidding.
Yeah, stop getting your boxers in a bunch.
Hey, redemption.
Good job.
Hey, redemption.
Not all men wear boxers, okay?
I don't wear boxers. I wear
not
boxers.
All men. Yeah.
But that's not all men. That's progress, Bob.
But if Mike, I think if Michael Quinn can still believe, then Kate Kelly can still believe. You know what I mean? It's not always the information that knocks people out, you know?
And John Hamer.
Good point.
Hamer doesn't believe. Like,
okay. I should have just left it. I should have just left it there.
All right. So I have to, I'm not trying to avoid questions, but I want to ask one kind of last big question before I have you guys bear your secular testimonies. So is something significant happening or not? You know, have we over the past 10, 20, 30, 40 years, depending on whether you start with B.H. Roberts or not, have we sort of put a chink in the armor? Is there a crack in the foundation of Mordor? Like, you know, are we onto something significant, or really are we all just a drop in the bucket?
Yeah.
And the church is gonna continue powering on.
We do need to get Krista the psychic on to answer this question because she will tell
think?
Us that we're part of a movement.
I can tell you what she would say.
Well, it's statistically significant. Whether or not it's ultimately significant in the long run to have real global impact on the church, I don't know that that's the case. But it certainly is having impact on a scale that has never been seen before, and I think that'll continue. So there will be a nice larger percentage leaving the church than ever did 20, 30 years ago, but ultimately that number is a drop in the bucket. So both things are true. It's
okay,
significant.
So it's statistically significant, but a small effect size is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I co-sign that because I think there's a parallel here to the to the Mormon narrative of where we are in eternity and how this moment of time is the most important ever. Don't screw up right now, even though you exist forever. That's a coincidence. And I think humans tend to just do that by default, is to be like, oh, the last 10 years of what I've done in the world, how big is it? And the truth is it's nothing. But relative to a tinier framework that you construct, sure, there's been a little bit of change, but it's really, nobody cares. What are we, like 5 million active people? Nobody cares, right, in the grand scheme of things.
Right. I mean, I do think that the things like the Book of Abraham essay, for example, I mean, sure, there's a lot of apologetic nonsense in there, but it is significant that they would acknowledge the existence of the papyri and the fact that they don't match the scholarly understanding of the writings don't match what's in the Book of Abraham at all. I think that, I mean, these are significant details, but I think it's kind of a correlation causation problem where we're all reacting to the same thing, and that thing is the internet. So the church, the birth of the blogging and podcasting, that was enabled by the internet, as well as the threat that the stimulus that caused that eventually led to these essays. That's also the internet, but it's not that. That isn't to say that the podcasting or the blogging influenced the essays directly. It's just they're all kind of happening together as part of a larger trend that's going on.
Yeah, I'm expanding my view right now, and I'm thinking about the invention of the printing press and the effect that ultimately had on the demise of Catholicism, you know, a branch off of Protestantism. It, you know, so maybe the internet as a mechanism in the big picture will have a significant impact like the printing press did and move people more towards secular humanism. That's possible. But I still think, you know, Bob's got a very valid point that we've got to be careful that we're not patting ourselves on the back too much for this moment in time. You know, we're taking advantage of a medium that is relatively new. And I think we'll probably see the ripple effect of that and the ramifications more in later years. But it could have a bigger impact than maybe at first glance I thought it did.
Anecdotally, I would say things are different now, and they're becoming it's becoming more and more so all the time in terms of every Mormon circle that I'm in, meaning, you know, my ward's growing up. Excuse me, growing up, or people from my mission, or people that I knew in college, there are people in those groups that I know that are leaving the church, every single one. And those people all have resources on the internet that they can go to. They all have books that they can order online and read, and they all have community outside of the church that are nearby them that they can reach out to. And 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that wasn't the case. Those books hadn't been written. The communities didn't exist. There wasn't anything, you know, major going on online. And I think that is a game changer in terms of what's going to happen. I don't think it's exponential, but it's going to be on the increase.
And I think the end game for all this is going to be a more retrenched, more uber conservative LDS church going forward. I just think people that are more liberally disposed will find those things, will leave, but that's just all that's going to do is leave the more strident right-wing conservative people. I think the church is going to become more and more extremist.
But do you think they've become more extremist in the last year?
You've got the Maxwell Institute kicking out Daniel Peterson and those guys. You've got Terrell Givens and Fiona Givens' book being sold front and center at Deseret Book. You don't think that's going to have an impact?
To the average member that I know, no.
Huh.
See, I've heard just the opposite. I've heard average members talking about how they don't like that the church is becoming more liberal, how they're toning things down on gays, how they're, you know, there was a friendly article in the church news about Muslims, and I heard people complaining about it, you know, like, well, why is the church promoting that kind of a thing? So I think the church right now is in just an incredibly awkward position where they've got this huge inertia of their membership, of what they've all been raised on, and then they've got their PR and their public side in terms of what they have to do. And they're just getting spread apart.
Interesting.
So, John, you envision a church that becomes more like the Community of Christ?
No, I honestly have no idea. That's why I feel like I'm going crazy sometimes, because sometimes I feel like the church is going to make progress, and sometimes I feel like it's just going to get worse, and sometimes I feel like it's just going to stay the same, and I honestly have no idea, you know?
Right, because it does things that make you indicate, oh, if you try to read the tea leaves, it's, oh, there's progress here, and then there's, you said the Oaks talk, and you say, okay, it's going to get worse, and it's even going to become, you know, it's going to go back to the 80s and the dark ages, and then there's progress again. And so that, I mean, I have that schizophrenic reaction as well, because that's what they do.
Well, even when they give a talk that seems like liberal Mormons get all excited over is Uchtdorf's talk. And in the end, he says, doubt your doubts. You know, it's basically, you know, the same message, just they're reacting to a lot of outside social pressures like John DeLynn. And and you know they want to give lip service, but really they're just retrenching. I seriously think because of the structure of the institution, they are fundamentally unable to be progressive in any way, and they're just going to get smaller and more conservative because the other people will leave.
And I really believe they want us to. They don't want us back. They're just as happy to have. They're thrilled. I'm not teaching gospel doctrine anymore. They're thrilled that we're not there. I believe.
Well,
that.
Not, when you say they, I don't even know what that means. Because
fair enough. At least the 12 and the people who. How about this? Kurt and McConkie's thrilled.
Well, because
can you tell me the last general conference that was like really progressive? General conference is really the thermometer or the barometer of where the church's direction is going, and we're always citing general conference talks as the things that disappoint us.
You get a mixed bag every conference.
Uchtdorf will say something good, then Christopher. Neil Anderson will give something awful,
and,
you know.
And my church leaders in my ward and in my stake, they're still inviting me to take callings, and they know where I am. They know where I stand. So what does that tell you?
They don't have a lot of people.
They don't respect you.
They don't respect me. Thanks, Glenn.
Yeah. All right. So you guys aren't bullish or bearish on the church. You're just kind of you think it's going to sputter along. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
It'll continue. The stone without hands will kind of limp forward and not really be stopped, but not be anything of consequence to many people.
Just like every stone, it peters out.
Do you guys ever look at world events and like fall back into your Mormon think and go, "Oh, it could be the end is coming. The end is here." Yeah, there was gonna. It did say there was gonna be all this weather change. There was gonna be all this conflict in the Middle East. You know, all wars and rumors of wars and all this stuff. Earthquakes in diverse places. But the moon is red tonight. It said it was gonna turn it to blood. Like, does that ever cross anybody's mind?
No, not even a little bit.
It crosses mine. It crosses my mind.
All right, so let's
name a time when there wasn't wars or rumors of wars. Right. Name one time.
In the Middle East.
Yeah, war, the history of mankind is a history of war. So
and it's getting better. Things are actually getting better. Is. John, didn't you write something recently?
I did.
On that, I read that, and I've articulated that, and you did a better job than me. But things are better than they have ever been.
Things are better. All right, so the future of Infants on Thrones, if you guys had to predict how long it will survive, you know, 6 months, a year, 5 years, and do you guys have anything cool in store for our listeners to kind of look forward to? Let's put a tie back.
It'll last as long as it'll last.
Yeah.
There's no signs of it slowing down. I feel like I think it's easy to commit for a couple more years pretty easily, but that's kind of as far out as I ever say about anything in my life.
I think overall we've been pretty resistant to adding core members like Perma. You know, even though we have people that can be regular contributors, maybe if you go out more than a couple of years, you might see some of us kind of lose interest and go, okay, I'm not going to be involved, and other people add. That could happen, but I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to see that. As far as anything, the reason I was chuckling for something fun is because we've been talking since July about doing Little Factories the musical as like a Christmas gift for everyone. Nice. And we even came up with like this Scrooge type storyline. And then, you know, I didn't tell you guys this, but last Saturday I was watching The Nutcracker and I thought, oh, The Nutcracker. Yeah, but, you know, that's as far as it's gone, so I don't think it's actually ever going to happen. No, but we haven't come up with
some other holiday to blow the deadline off to.
Look for it coming to a feed near you December 2015.
Yeah.
So it'll last as long as it lasts.
I've tried to leave a couple of times, but Glenn keeps calling, keeps talking me back on.
What?
Back on. Oh, come on, you know. Tom, you remember my email? I'm done. I don't want to talk about Mormonism anymore.
I don't remember that.
I couldn't remember why you changed your mind. I was just glad you did.
Yeah. That's because Glenn contacted me. Well, but apparently he's got amnesia about it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, but my response is then don't talk about Mormonism. Let's just talk about shit we like to talk about.
It always comes back to Mormonism because that's our whole experience.
Right, which is why we continue to talk about it. But
and why Jake just got so pissed off at the Book of Abraham SmackDown is like the more we look at it, the more we're like. Actually, I have the same problem when I watch The Daily Show and Colbert Report. I get so angry at my conservative family, and I'm just like, this is so unhealthy, you know. And so the more we talk about Mormonism, the more the less charitable I am towards my believing friends and family members that they believe this stupid shit.
I agree with that.
And it's unhealthy. Yeah. It's like it poisons the well of my relationships, and I sometimes I just want to get away from it, and even though Glenn doesn't remember, I basically sent in my resignation email, and he talked me back into it to come back. So
I probably just didn't even realize that you were serious.
Come back.
Oh yeah, baby, come back.
Baby, come back. Any kind of fool could truly see there was something in everything about you. Baby, come back. You could blame it all on me. I was wrong.
Baby, come back.
So this is my official resignation. I'm done.
Oh.
Okay. Whoa.
Don't do it, Randy.
But you're gonna do that Saturday's Warrior minisode that we've been talking about for a while, right? That when your kids were watching it and they're like, "What is this?"
For like 6 months, yeah.
That's awesome. and the funerals, you got to do the funerals one.
And then I'm done.
And then you were gonna do one with my sister? Which one was that one?
That was the one on funerals.
Oh, because she's gonna like hand you your lunch on that one. She's so ready.
And the euthanasia.
I'm so scared.
Oh, euthanasia.
Yeah, euthanasia. And I had an idea for you, Randy, but I'm going to hold it for 2016.
Yeah, you're not done, Randy. Sorry.
That's awesome.
No one's taking you seriously.
All right, fellas. Well, let's end. As you guys know, I always end. You got to leave your listeners with something you believe with your secular testimony, infants on throne style. So I'm going to start with Jake. Jake, give our listeners something you believe as a closing thought.
I actually have a minisode of Brother Jake Bears' testimony.
Nice.
So that would be one to look up where I bear my testimony about the scientific method. But that's, you know, that's all good. But something I believe in... although I don't believe in absolute morality, I do believe in objective morality. I believe in humanism. I believe that we can find solutions, and we can reach consensus as a society to bring the most amount of utility to the largest number of people, and we can come together. We have the fortitude within us to be able to care for those around us without necessarily expecting something in return, some sort of eternal reward. And I believe that we have that empathy wired in us and we can pursue that. So I guess morality outside of religion, that's my testimony.
All right. All right. Excellent. Liked it. No, it's good. All right, Tom, you're next.
Oh, I think people should laugh more. They should have more fun, enjoy life. My wife kids around with me because it's one of the joys that I just thoroughly enjoy is just making her laugh. It's like a challenge that I have, you know, even if it's a dumb joke or something. But she told me the other day, she's like, you know, the littlest things seem to make you so happy. And that is the absolute truth. Just the tiniest little gestures, the tiniest little things. Sometimes when I'm listening to a podcast, sometimes when I'm listening to music and just something brings a smile to my face and gets me through the day, I can hang on to that moment for quite a while, and it carries me to the next moment, to the next. And that's really what I hold on to the most right now, just because all this, you know, transitioning out of the church, the having to accept this
shit sandwich.
Yeah, the large level of uncertainty. It's just, it's overwhelming. It's just too much to bear for me personally. And so, you know, I find little diversions. I find little things to enjoy. I love my family, my kids. They mean everything to me. And I just, it's like I hold them closer now than I ever did. And I think that's a good thing. So, I don't know, I guess my testimony would be is enjoy the little things and hold your family and your friends close. Yeah.
Nice. All right, Bob?
So, when I decided to tell my family that I had left Mormonism, and so I was kind of, you know, living a double life, Mormon style, for 2 years, when I wrote them a letter, I wanted to let them know, like, the things that still matter to me, even if the church had fallen away in my life. And so it's like a quick list, but here's just a smattering of the things that matter to me that I believe hold value. Self-sustainability, change for the better, humor, comedy, and drama, love and family, doing good for others, experiencing the world, knowledge, and last but not least, pleasant interactions with friends, acquaintances, and strangers.
Nice. It's like a value statement.
Yeah.
Very nice. Oh, you got to post that somewhere, Bob.
And Bob.
All right, Scott.
Sure. Two things. Live authentically and be out. Just... I personally was not out for too long, and it was damaging, more damaging than it needed to be. It's damaging enough. It's fine to take your time, but I would encourage anybody who is not out, who doesn't have the ability to, you know, have that open door with people in their lives, to take that step. It's really hard, but it's totally, totally worth it. And don't put up with that for too long in your life, because it sucks. Second thing is, people, even though they can be really awful sometimes, I have a really deep belief and a faith in people, in their inherent goodness. And that when you're real with people, that reaps huge rewards. At the end of the day, our relationships are really what we care about. We really don't care a whole lot about much else. But if we have good relationships with people that we love, then that's what's important. So cultivating that and trying to keep that as authentic as we can, that's kind of what my life's about now.
Nice. All right, Matt?
Yeah, echoing some things, but personal relationships and the concept of impermanence makes those personal relationships just that much more special and important. You know, I sometimes think the idea of eternal relationships and the eternity actually cheapens what we have here. And so those two things I believe in, that sometimes relationships are, well, in every instance, relationships are impermanent, and that's okay. And sometimes they're impermanent because we get upset with each other and we just can't maintain friendships or relationships the way that we could. But in the period of time where we have them, they are so important and so meaningful. Some of my closest friends in the world, I don't see on a regular basis and may not hang out like I ever did before, but the period of time when I did, it was special and it was important. And, you know, I hope to be with my wife for as many years as I'll be alive, but at some point that won't happen. But, you know, it's okay because we are together. We see each other now. we're together, and the appreciation of that with friends and family and even coworkers, and just laughing with people is that's what I believe in, is finding those moments and appreciating them for what they are, which is very, very brief, very, very impermanent. But yet really, really special.
Nice. All right, Randy.
Well, I'm a secular humanist, so I believe that moral questions should be subjected to logic, reason, and evidence as best that we have, but also infused with a heavy dose of human empathy. That's how I live my life. I also believe that getting rid of the eternal perspective really intensifies the importance of the here and now. Like, for example, I know that my kids have only one childhood, and there's no throne in heaven for them, you know. And at one point, my kid that's 6 years old almost drowned on my watch, and it was a horrific, horrific experience. But because of that experience, I'm even more acutely aware of how precious his childhood is. And so I try to spend as much time as I can with my kids. I guess those are my pillars. It kind of echoes what Matt said. Really appreciate what you have now, and you know, appreciate it to its fullest, and the other is the morality issue. So that, nice. That's what, those are the things I hang my hat on.
Beautiful. All right, Glenn, bring us home.
Well, I think, you know, we do a lot of mocking and criticizing in what we do, and I think there's a place for that, and I think it's important that if you're gonna dish it out, you got to be able to take it. And so when you're doing that, there has to be like an element of charity in what you do. And this is gonna sound like I'm making a joke, but I'm really not, because this was a formative aspect of Mormonism, that charity, if you don't have charity, you're nothing. Right? And charity suffereth long and is kind and envieth not and is not puffed up, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, if you have not charity, you're nothing, for charity never faileth. Cleave unto it. It's the greatest thing of all. I think that's pretty good. Pretty good stuff.
Moroni chapter 7, verse 45.
Yeah, and it's also kind of word for word in somewhere in the King James too, which is amazing. It's weird
how that happened.
It was that important that we get this message.
But Glenn, speaking of mockery and criticism, you could sub in obedience, and that would still like be totally Mormon too. I mean, it's, you know, the way we, whenever we talk about anything, it's the most important. Charity.
It's first law.
Oh, the superlative part of it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 2 a.m. now. I'm kind of losing.
Oh. Well, in the spirit of Infants on Thrones, I'll just say that you all sound like a bunch of girls.
Oh, yeah.
No, you know, that was pretty
takes
weak.
One to know one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh, the feminists are going to kill me. Okay, so I'd like to thank all the listeners who stuck with us for 4 freaking hours. I want to thank
you said
all
freaking.
I know,
okay.
Fetching.
Fetching.
Fuck. Thanks for sticking with us, listeners. Thanks to this awesome panel, Infants on Thrones. You guys are doing great work. I love it. And I appreciate you giving me a chance to interview you. And all the listeners, please check out infantsandthrones.com. Please show them a good, friendly Mormon Stories bump. because their work is really quality stuff and it's worth listening to. And, you know, I hope you guys will join us on the Mormon Stories blog to give your comments, but I'm sure you'll post this at your blog too. So let the conversations rage on. But I think you guys are all amazing. I appreciate all you've done. And I really look forward to what you're going to do in the future. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Hi, this is John DeLynn from Logan, Utah, and I am a douchebag. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Have you really, John? Because we have, in our 2.5 years, we have 214 ratings on iTunes. You've got 255. So we passed Mormon Expression, and we threw a party that day. We got you in our sights. And I will say that of our 214, 205 are 5-star ratings, which is 96%. And if you're 255, you've got 211, which is only 83%. So,
rubbing it in, wow.
I just wanted to point that out.
That's awesome. I love it. All right, I'll join you in the party when you surpass me. How's that?
Rock on. All right.
Hey, just so you know, John, I gave a 5-star review to you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for joining us today on Mormon Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please help us make more like it by becoming a monthly subscriber at mormonstories.org. Music for this episode was provided by the Lower Lights.
Why am I always measuring stuff, dude?
Because you're like my... Jake? You're like... We used to be married.
Yeah, that's
we true. Used to be married.
why don't you do the dishes anymore?
You know what? That's what I started doing. I have become the dishes person in my house since that whole Kate Kelly flare-up. I went to my wife and I said, you know what? From now on, this is my job. I got it. And I've gone like a whole 6 days doing it. And I'm like, and she's like, yeah, this is kind of cool. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I'm the dishes guy.
But Glenn, you don't get any credit for that, right? Because
right,
like babysitting your own child.
No, but it was
not all men do the dishes.
Yeah, no, it was something that I recognized, you know, because I went to one of those links that Kate shared there, and like one of the first things was do more housework, and I'm like, yeah, you know, the housework thing isn't a chauvinism thing as much as it is just being lazy and your tolerance for filth. And I have a higher tolerance for filth than my wife does, so she does it more often than I do. But I thought I'm going to step up. I'm going to do that. That's an area I can make an impact. So
good for you, Glenn.
And you're my role model, Matt.
Well, yeah, but I started doing housework and those types of things to get out of church.
Yeah.
So I would do all the laundry on Sunday so I could stay home and watch football, and I would do laundry. And that was the – once I started doing that, it was a little bit of a little underhand, a little shady,
yeah.
Is that
she
I got no
couldn't be
no
mad
comments.
At you if the house was clean when she got home.
That's exactly right. It. And then yeah. It turned out I actually liked it because now I got more time with my wife because we didn't have to go do that stuff. So it really kind of – that was the starting point of it. But then helping out actually became a natural thing because it's like, wow, things get done quicker this way. So, yeah, there you go.
Cool.
So if you don't want to go to church, guys, and you want to watch football, tell your wife, leave all the laundry. I'll do all the laundry. I'll do all the folding, and you will get a bigger pass.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yacht tip number 5.
And then you have to get the NFL Sunday ticket because so you can watch more games, and then it's really an investment in the laundry and in the housework. And
yeah, we get
win-win.
That. We get it.
Randy's over there with his finger in the air. Wrap it up, man.
We get it.
All right. You guys ready for part 3?
Yep. Oh, we've been recording for 2.5 minutes.
No, I know. So have I. So have I.
Okay. Well, I want to grab a drink of water real quick. I'm sorry.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to get a drink of something else real quick, too. Hang on.
Drink
hey,
something
Randy. Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.